Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Escape Collective Tour Daily. I'm pleased to report that I don't sound...
Hey, you sound better.
Real gross, like I did last night. That was just unfortunate. Yeah, I've turned it around. I'm Kaylee Fretz. We are on the top of a mountain in a place that kind of looks like Germany but isn't. Joshua Robinson of the Wall Street Journal, can you set the scene for me?
Oh, wow. This is a lot of pressure. I've never set a scene before on this podcast. We are in a place that has at various points in its history been Germany, but is Alsace, and that's why all the town names seem quite German. There's a local dialect that's much closer to German than it is to French.
The fonts are kind of aggressive.
The fonts are very Gothic.
They are. You come into this region, and all of a sudden the restaurants are yelling at you.
What I'll say is that last night we were in Besançon, which was very like French Dispatch Wes Anderson.
Beautiful.
We've fully slid into Grand Budapest Wes Anderson now.
Yes, that's a very accurate description. Also joining us tonight, Johnny Long.
Hello. I'm not a fan of the German things going on. Just a bit weird, to be honest. And it was a nightmare to get up this mountain today. Nearly fought two different security guards today. I'm coming to the end of my tether.
Yep.
But good race.
The end of the tether is near. Kate, unfortunately for you, you got a whole other week of racing to cover.
What do you say, unfortunately? It's my first Tour de France femme.
Avec Zwift.
You've
got to remember to add the Avec Zwift.
At first reference.
Avec Zwift.
You need to code switch to the Avec Zwift.
You're not tired yet.
No.
So it's not unfortunate for you.
No.
I think if Johnny and I were either of us were asked to cover another week of bike racing,
then
we would.
They would strangle the security guard with his lanyard. Yep. I think. I mean, you know, some of those guys really do love wearing the badge. It's like the only like sort of power they have in their lives, and they relish it every last drop of it.
No, it was the guy. It was the Highway Services security guard who was monitoring the HGVs in the parking, who's going very slowly while we're in a rush. And I was beeping at him and then like cut in front of him, which I wasn't supposed to do. And then he came over to have a chat with me and I was ready to die for my cause. I decided that then and there, I was so tired and done with everything that I was ready to...
Slow driving security man was the hill you were prepared to die
on. Yeah, it's good to find one. It's good to find something that you care about enough to die for.
Yep. Well, this is why we have a whole sort of team switch happening right now. And we're going to hear from Abby Mickey and Matt Deneef later in the episode. They've sent a little dispatch over from Clermont-Ferrand, Clermief, and we're going to see how they're finding it, because that is where Tour de France Femme starts tomorrow. Tomorrow, there's actually going to be two episodes tomorrow. So we'll hear from Abby and Matt in a little bit. They've been seeing the scenes, catching the vibes, and then... Kate, unfortunately, you are going to miss the first stage because you're going to be with us in Paris. But then you're going to take a train down and be on from stage, two to eight?
Eight.
Yeah. So we got another week of bike racing coming up, but let's finish this one off. It was a good stage today. We had heroics from Thibaut Pinot's last sort of real Tour de France stage. I'm not counting tomorrow. He got to ride through his own corner. Oh, we have a beer down. We need to fix that. He got to ride through his own corner with like 10 billion people on it, and that was pretty cool. But in the end, the GC group was kept too close. Tadej Pogacar wanted a stage win as a means of, I don't know, putting a little hat on this kind of sad tour for him. A happy little hat on the sad tour for him. And he did so. So we have Tadej Pogacar as today's stage winner. Jonas Vingegaard, barring... something that has, I don't think, ever happened to the Tour. Barring that, in terms of a rider losing out on the Champs-Élysées, barring something crazy happening tomorrow, Jonas Vingegaard will win this 2023 Tour de France, and it'll be his second in 2 years.
Yep, we had the... No, let's wait to discuss the press conferences. Let's discuss Thibaut Pinot.
Yep.
For a minute, it looked like the script writers were going to have done too much. And Pino's off the front. He was going up past his virage, his sort of holy place that, according to Google Maps, it's labeled as. Arthur Vichot, his former teammate, was apparently leading the charge. It was a lot. If you're watching on normal TV, it's probably great fun. If you're watching on French TV, it was like he was being, what's the word when you become a saint? Canonized. After the stage, we had like cut scenes between Thibaut Pinot waiting to be interviewed and Marc Madeau just walking. All he was doing was walking, and then he was waiting and watching Thibaut Pinot being interviewed, and then they both had a hug and started crying, and then Marc Madeau was like sort of wiping away the tears, like being like, no, I'm not going to cry. And it was just like...
But he was going to cry.
No one loves the... If only Jonas Vingegaard loved the camera about 1% as much as Marc Madeau does, then everything would be perfect.
There was a time there where it did seem like the impossible was going...
He was
going
to do it.
Well, actually, I shouldn't say that.
I mean, kind of impossible. Kind of impossible just because they... When the GC guys want to win the stage, then
yeah,
you can't really.
It was really obvious that UAE wanted to control it and wanted to win the stage. And I think if they hadn't, then Jumbo-Visma probably would have talked to Christian Nierman after the stage. And he was basically like, yeah, like we kind of had the same plan, but they did it first. So we just sat behind him. So I think that honestly, Pinot, it was never going to happen today. But what he did get was a suitable send-off. He got to be alone over the top of a climb that he is the Strava local legend of, is what I was told today. I haven't actually confirmed that, which means he rides it a lot. And I think that's pretty cool. He had his own corner. He had his own, like, thousands of people up there.
It was a very vibe send-off. It was not a results send-off.
Yeah, but
I think that, like, I think if you look at Pinot and who he is and why people love him, I mean, his whole career has been a little bit bittersweet, right? And I think that this was a pretty good testament to that. It's like the love and the glory is really real. It doesn't have to come with winning the stage. It's not necessary.
In fact, it might ruin it.
Right. And like coming very close and then the heartbreak, that has become his identity. And in that respect, he went out in some style because he wanted the stage win. He finished seventh. And if you look at the overall GC.
He finished. So I got points. Sorry.
Yes,
my fantasy team appreciates that.
And then in the GC, Pinot won a top 10 in some weird fever dream, perhaps. Finished 11th.
Oh no!
But in the overall Frenchman classification, he is France's favorite Frenchman. He finished third.
David Goudou fell down today, and no one even cared.
The GC goes 9, 10, 11. David Goudou, Guillaume Martin. Thibaut Pinot.
See, the French, they pretend to love David Goudou, but really, when the real Frenchman, Thibaut Pinot, is off the front, there's no contest.
We needed Ian here to report from the Groupama FDJ bus after the stage where David Goudou's fall prevented him from snogging his girlfriend again. because that's become the biggest French story, really. I mean,
yep.
There were no cameras there, they're all on Pinot. It was, I mean, the most Pinot thing would have been if he'd been, like, caught on the line or, like, in the lead up to it.
Yeah, if it was, like, really, really close. But realistically, as soon as the GC guys accelerated, they closed that minute gap in about 5 minutes.
The best way it could have ended would have been if, like, Pidcock had, like, screened round him on that descent and, like, he finished first and then Pinot finished second, just because it would bring back up all of the sort of French hating of Ineos Sky.
Well, or if somehow, you know, in the last 10 meters, Pinot about to win, pauses to contemplate sort of being in nothingness.
Wow. He would be an existentialist, wouldn't he?
Christian Nierman, who's the Jumbo-Visma director, was also asked whether he was aware of the fact that if, for example, Jonas Vingegaard had beaten Thibaut Pinot today, that he was going to be the most reviled man in all of France. I think Nierman's answer was accurate in that, one, none of the other teams in this race had any interest in gifting Thibaut Pinot a stage win today, and two, Thibaut Pinot probably wouldn't want such a gift unless it was hidden away and not really clear that it was a gift, and then I think he would probably absolutely take that gift.
Absolutely.
I think there was also an unsaid part of Grisha Nierman's response, which was really, what the hell are you talking about?
What the hell are you talking about? Wow, it's a fucking motorbike. That wasn't the best one, but it's late. It's late. I've already done it like four times today.
You've ruined Grisha Nierman for me.
Wow. I think, Johnny, it was you that drew the analogy to a like retiring football/soccer player getting sent off purposely in the 80th of 90
minutes.
Off,
yeah.
You're getting subbed
for
off.
For the standing ovation.
Because then you get the standing ovation. Yeah. And it's actually almost better to do that than to just finish the game, right? Because it's very obvious that this particular individual is getting the standing ovation. I feel like it's kind of the same with Pino today. Like, it's almost better that he didn't win because he got his corner, he got his moment, and then the race continues, and that's sport and that's life.
Although Marc Madiot did say on French television afterwards that this isn't the proper send-off. The proper send-off will probably be Il Lombardia. So we get to do it all over again.
I mean, he can say that all he wants, but the last big stage of the Tour de France through his region is definitely his send-off. Not the random one-day race in Italy.
Is it time to talk about how Pog has that dog in him?
We can talk about that. We can talk about the dog Pog.
Yeah.
Pog dog.
I want to say Tadej Pogacar is a bike racer's bike racer. And you can see when he went across that line and beat Vingegaard that he was just like living for it. Like, he let out just like a primal scream. You're like, okay, he wanted that.
He said in the so we should preface this in case people don't listen to Tour de France podcasts in the past. The penultimate day is actually when we get sort of the big winners press conference. Normally the press conferences happen remotely these days. Like, they're in a truck somewhere and we're in the press room and we talk via video camera. But on this last or second to last day, they get trucked in. They get stuck in front of us in person, in real life. They did make us all put masks on, which I think is hilarious. Or are they going to contract and then test positive for COVID in the next 24 hours? I don't know what the problem is there. Anyway, they did that. And we get to ask them questions in person, which is really nice. And the reason I sort of provide that context is because I thought that some of Pogacar's answers
were awesome.
So because of Pogacar coming in second, we get him in this press conference. We get Vingegaard in his press conference. And yeah, some great answers to questions about, like, why do you race the way you race? Why do you choose your schedule the way you choose it? And his answers are basically like, I really like bike racing and I really like challenges.
Yeah.
And I set different challenges for myself every year. And this year it was, let's do a really good classics campaign. And he had a very good classics campaign. But he did kind of admit that that's potentially part of the reason why he didn't have as good a Tour de France. I think his quote, paraphrasing, was something like, sometimes you set challenges that are too big. And I think he was talking about this year.
I mean, his sports director, Mara Giannetti, said to me this morning that essentially, I asked him, like, you know, today is today, right? He races all of these one-day races. He does all this stuff. And is there a threat that he might not be that way anymore and that he wants to go to the Tour? And Giannetti said, absolutely not. He said something really interesting, which is that for today, the hardest part mentally was not during the Tour, or not even on Col de la Loz. It was in the 5 weeks before the Tour where he had his broken wrist and was seeing how everyone was training and seeing everyone on Instagram being like on Tita or whatever. And he thinks that, like, if it wasn't for the wrist, if it wasn't for Liège, it would be a completely different story, so that this question is completely irrelevant.
And Pogacar said that he will come back. He says he's hungrier. Again, paraphrasing, because this is, just listened to it half an hour ago. Basically hungrier than ever, and we'll come back to the Tour next year, because he says, I've lost two of them now and I don't want to do that anymore, basically.
And also he said, quote, I'm not a little boy anymore, by which he means he is no longer going to be in the white jersey after tomorrow.
Yeah, last day in the white jersey tomorrow.
End of an era.
Do you think anyone will notice when Tadej Pogacar's not wearing the white jersey anymore? Because the jersey's just white anyway. Like, halfway through, you're just like, well, it's just the UAE Team Emirates jersey, right?
Damn close. Yeah.
One, before we talk about Jonas Vingegaard and Adam Yates' press conference, attended by fewer people than the other two, but he's got a long-rumoured sense of humour that he doesn't share with the outside world. I think Chris Marshall Bell reported on it. Maybe he got into some trouble for how he reported on it.
The story was yanked down, I believe.
Yeah. Well, we got to see some of that today.
He was quite good.
Because he was asked whether this third spot on the podium means that he will maybe want to try his chance at a GC of another Grand Tour. Because he did come to finish the best of the humans.
He was top human.
That means that maybe you can win the Giro or the Vuelta. And he's basically, his contract is to be a super domestique, basically, and go where the team wants him. And I'm sure he's remunerated very well for doing so. And he does a very good job. But he said, you know, he'll do whatever the team wants. He will ride the Tour for Tadej. If they want him to go to the Vuelta, go to the Vuelta. If they want him to go and do GC at the Tour of Guangxi in China, he will do that. So it was a cycling related joke, but a joke nonetheless.
Excellent jokes.
He also said, like, how old is he now?
30.
He said, I'm 30, mate.
30, mate.
What is that supposed to mean? Like, I'm just over the hill already?
Asking, no, someone asked if, like, now that we've... Now, you know, obviously we've got Jonas and Tade and, like, the other guys who are great, but now we've seen the Yateses at the tour, so maybe that will be the next thing. And he's like, no, mate. No. That's not happening. That's not how it works.
Also, apparently he is the DJ for the UAE Team Emirates
bus.
Yeah,
I was standing outside the bus waiting to talk to Felix Groschartner about the team's two-week obsession with GeoGuessr. It's the game they like to play on their bus because it doesn't cause any stress. I'm going to write about this. Hopefully I'll publish it before the podcast goes out. They prefer Fortnite, but that causes a lot of stress. So GeoGuessr is just a harmless, fun game. But while I was waiting, I was listening to the players and Shazamming them all. And then I asked Felix, who does the music? And the bus is like, always on Adam's phone, but we're allowed to queue up songs. So he asked Adam why.
They are such the vibes team.
Yeah, right? and he said, unfortunately, this was less fun and jokey. He thinks it's because his bus is at the front and nearest to the Bluetooth. which is, you know.
He said for sprint stages, it's rap.
Yeah,
which,
but today
okay.
It's more like house.
It's like
a lot
dance
of house
music,
remixes
dance
of
music,
songs popular in the 90s and noughties.
Yeah.
That's kind
of
cute.
It was good. If anyone wants to see the songs, I did a Twitter thread of all the Shazams because I was so bored waiting for them.
That is such
I had
a vibe.
Literally nothing else to do. It was great.
Go check out. Were you at Johnny Long? What are you on the on
I
the
am
tweets.
Johnny Long.
At I am Johnny Long with no H.
No H.
Two N's, no H. Do we have any other? Any other Pogi insights? He was great. He was chatty.
Well, a really important one that I think is that, like, someone asked him about Côte de la Loz and, like, what he learned from that, and
yep.
he said something about how really suffering, like, for the first time, and
yeah.
He said that's shit.
Well, he said that he was able to suffer when he feels really shit, and I think that. The reason that's important is because I think he's probably felt pretty darn good on a bike for most of his life.
Yeah.
And imagine if you are the world's best cyclist, which he still probably is, you probably spend most of your time, like, other people are racing around in front of you, and you're like, I'm not even really racing yet. I'm just kind of hanging out still. And so I imagine that the suffering side might have been. And I mean suffering, not just like in terms of pain, because he does intervals and he does those things like that. I mean, like, getting dropped, not something that he's had to experience all that often. And he was able to power through it. So he did learn that about himself. But he also said that he doesn't really know why it happened, other than he just felt like shit.
What he does know, he said, is that it wasn't the grand Jumbo stage-by-stage plan that killed him. The sort of incremental death by a thousand cuts approach. He said, I cracked myself.
Yep.
Which I'm not sure is true. And Johnny is shaking his head here.
Nah, but it speaks to the rivalry that, like, Pogačar will say stuff like that. And then, just to bring in what Jonas Vingegaard said, someone asked him what their tactics were to crack Pogačar. He didn't even want to tell us what that was. He's like, you have to talk to Grishin Ehrman and Meron Zeman and maybe they'll tell you. And it's just like, well...
I mean, the tactics.
Fair enough. That's how close it is that they don't want to, like, give any insight into how they think about each other.
I mean, the thing is though, like, GC tactics are not chess.
That developed.
Like, they're
it's not.
It's exercise contest.
It's an exercise contest that, like, you basically just decide, okay, let's exercise a little bit harder here for a little while, and maybe if we exercise hard enough, he won't be able to exercise as hard as us. That's GC riding. It's not like a one day where
put that on a t-shirt.
It's not like a one day where, you know, groups form and split and come back and, like, you have to time it and all these other things. It's pretty much
exercise.
It's just like a ton of exercise. And so I just don't really buy.
We overplay that bit, I think.
Yeah, well, and Jumbo overplays it. Like, you know what they did?
We're geniuses.
Oh, what, Daniel?
They rode as hard as they could a couple days in a row in the hope that the exercising would make their foe tired.
Do less good exercise.
Yep. He couldn't do as much exercise as Jonas Vingegaard.
Jonas Vingegaard's press conference
was
half of the course for a Jonas Vingegaard press conference. There was one moment
of levity.
Humanity, yeah. I think people get cross when we sort of talk Jonas Vingegaard down. He's obviously a great bike racer, but and that, but that's like, that's decided by the general classification. Kind of what we're here for is to classify people based on their vibes and personality. Like that's the thing. And
yeah.
When I'm personally, I'm not going to apologize for it, but he's like kind of a boring private guy, which is fine because like, he races bikes, but we're not going to sit here and pretend that he lights up a room and is really interesting and funny. Which, because maybe that's the marginal gain, that's the tactic, is you don't put any energy into pleasing the media or fans. Go on.
So these penultimate day, these second last, day before the day.
Yeah, that whatever. Is penultimate.
Penultimate day. Yeah, but we had, never mind.
Never.
these penultimate day press conferences, sometimes the winner gets a clap, gets an ovation. From the press room.
Oh, yeah, I didn't notice that.
And sometimes they don't.
He didn't.
And he did not. And this is not really, it doesn't mean anything other than like the some of the press are sycophants and they tend to suck up to certain.
Grande.
Yeah, exactly.
Grande Jonas.
Exactly. And the Danish aren't. But, you know, like one year Wiggins got applause. Froome pretty much never got applause. It is sort of an indication of sort of the general just feel from the press room in terms of our relationship with these
and that's
athletes.
Why Ard had to get up and be like, I want to thank all the press for these 3 weeks.
Yeah, so that's the other thing that normally happens in these press conferences is they thank us for all of their excellent coverage, and nobody thanked us today, so why would we even come back?
No, Ard thanked us.
I don't want thanks from Ard. I want thanks from Jonas Vingegaard.
I'll tell you, it could not be more different from the Egan Bernal year when there was basically a parade in the press room.
I bet he could have been elected
president of Colombia right then and there.
I should say I'm kidding about the we don't need thanks. but that's like a bit of a tradition, is that that's part of these press conferences, is they come in and it's like, because again, like they tend to be separated from us by a couple layers of press people or like literal video cameras or whatever for a lot of the Tour de France. And this is it's the time when they sit 10 feet in front of the entire press corps and we can ask the questions we want to ask. And as a result, usually it goes both ways. Usually it's, you know, you get a bit of like, thank you for your coverage all month, blah, 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 blah.
Maybe everyone's coverage wasn't good enough. I mean,
maybe our coverage was shit.
Inventing yeah. Jake Harris.
It's not like a speech or anything. Like. It's just, you know. It's worth noting also, when these things are different than they yeah. normally are.
Also, when they come into that room, it's just a bunch of like mean-faced, like Belgian French dudes who aren't. It's not very inviting. Like you see them tense up a little bit just because there's like newspaper guys there who have seen everything and like are just there like.
And
the love's gone.
And this press conference or this press room was especially chaotic. We're talking about a tent at the top of the Markstein instead of like, you know, somewhere luxurious like a high school gym, and. And it was windy, and there was feedback from the speakers, quite jarring to a small man like Jonas.
There was a generator right outside that was making tons of noise, and a bar playing terrible Europop for a while, and Highway to Hell blasting Highway to Hell for most of Jonas Vingegaard's press conference.
But we did get one moment of, you know, where his private exterior fell down when someone asked him what he was most looking forward to after. The tour, and he said Durum, which is a kebab.
Great.
So, all we know about Jonas Vingegaard, really, apart from being a family man, is that he loves a Donna Durum.
He loves, in this order,
his wife
and kid,
and child.
Second, bike racing. Bike racing. Tour de France.
Third, kebab.
Fourth, needing a new bike.
I mean, there may be a huge gap between second and third. You know, we just don't know what goes in there, as far as we know. It's just
and if we ask, we would have to ask his sports director if he's allowed to reveal that strategy.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Has he gotten married? Because he's referred to his partner as his girlfriend previously, and I think referred to her as his wife today. Not that it really matters, but...
He did get married over the off-season.
Yeah?
I think they are married.
Mostly maybe. Just like, I mean, if we write a story later, I'd like to know how to refer to her. But
I would say partner.
Partner works. Okay. As an aside, should we get into some corners?
Yeah.
We have a couple corners.
Yeah.
We're going to do some corners, and then we're going to get over to Clermy F, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to leave, and we're going to be back tomorrow in Paris. So,
do we have You're in Trouble today?
We have a You're in Trouble. However, we've kind of decided that you don't actually have to have urinated and be in trouble to be the You're in Trouble corner.
Yeah, just
so
might be.
It's just whoever got in trouble with the jury today, basically.
Okay.
And we do have a urine trouble.
Careful.
However, it is. However, it is not for urinating.
Should we guess what it's for and then guess who it was? Or is that going to take too long?
So we have riding on the sidewalk, which is banned, illegal. Not it's supposed to do it.
A Peter Sagan-esque move, Matt.
Yep. So this is actually a serious. This is a serious thing. Minus 16 points. So 20-second penalty in the GC. Minus 16 points in the points classification. Minus 8 points in the climbers classification.
It's so dumb.
200 Swiss franc fine. And
whoa, holy shit.
And 225 UCI points.
Right. They got fined, and they got that fine to do, and then we're guessing what it was that happened.
They have to guess who it was.
Oh, what, right on the sidewalk? Sidewalk, God, I've been with the Americans for too long.
Who?
The pavement.
Who rode on the pavement on the sidewalk today?
I reckon it was Clément Champoussin.
I'm going to say Tom Pidcock.
You're gonna need some help because you have no indication as to who this might be.
Team.
This rider is a former world champion.
Ooh.
And winner of multiple Tour de France stages.
I've got a guess. Do you want to go first, Kate?
Yeah, Matej Mohoric.
Former world champion?
Yeah, juniors.
Elite road world champion.
Well, fuck.
Michał Kwiatkowski.
Not Kwiatkowski.
Rui Costa.
Yes. Johnny
wow,
wins.
Wow, Slay.
Matej Johnny. Mohoric. Juniors. It's juniors, Kate.
He did invent the Super Tuck in that junior
yeah,
world.
Yeah,
Rogers.
That he was, yeah. Okay.
Yep.
That counts
for me. He sent me a nice message.
But it wasn't
this morning,
on the sidewalk.
The so. He's a reader of the Escape Collective, and you should be too. If Matej Mohoric can read Escape Collective, you can join for $1 right now.
Did we give him a free membership, or did he have to go pay?
I'm assuming he got something
free. He just hasn't hit the paywall because you got to read 5 articles first, and that's probably the first.
Yeah, but he's reading.
The first and last until we publish something else about him. All we need to do is just publish 6 Matej Mohoric pieces in one single month and then get his bank details.
Yeah, but anyways, if he's good enough to read it, then so are you.
Head over to escapecollective.com/join. Be like Matej Mohoric. Sort of. Do we have any more corners? Do we have a Slovenian corner?
Let me think of a Slovenian corner.
Well,
didn't we just have it?
I think that was.
I think this whole like kind of counts as a Slovenian corner. I guess I can say one thing about Pogačar, which is that he's really fun. And one time I was giving an interview with him, and he asked me where I was living in Ljubljana, and I told him I was my apartment was in the same building of a bar, and he says, "I know that bar."
He knows that bar.
Have you ever seen him there?
No, but I think he actually went to high school, like, right around the corner from there.
Oh. So, Tadej Pogačar drinks, which, according to Richard Plugger, you can't do because it's poison. And it will destroy any cycling ability, even though all of his riders have then subsequently been pictured and posted on Twitter of them in quaffing beers.
Can we call this Winning Hearts and Minds Corner?
Yes.
Yeah, let's do Winning Hearts and Minds Corner.
So, Winning Hearts and Minds Corner today is...
How not to do it.
How not to do it. Which is Richard Pluga, who is the sort of general manager of Jumbo-Visma, going and talking to L'Équipe, which is France's largest daily sports newspaper, and basically saying that Groupama FDJ doesn't win bike races because they have beers on rest days.
The riders drink beer on the rest day, and then Mark Madio corrects the record saying they don't. It was the staff, and they do that every rest day.
And the riders have fizzy water.
Yeah, which is a treat for them.
Special treat for
and
good
yeah,
boys.
And then Mark Madio then sticks the elbow in by being like, I don't, that's not how I prepare my riders. I don't ask any questions how he prepares his riders. So, you know, we're sitting beneath a massive sort of, what would you call this? Like
a canopy.
But it's not breezy. Casting nearly as much shade upon us as Madio did on Plugger.
It was just like a really...
bad winner.
They're about to win the bike race, and he's giving quotes about various reasons
why everyone else is shit and
why other
great.
Teams
when
are
that's
not.
Already been decided.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like, come
this
on, dude.
Is, you know what's funny is that Richard Pluga used to be a journalist, and it's like you think he would know something about PR.
Yeah.
Sometimes it probably goes to your head, doesn't it, when you beat Tadej Pogačar by 7 minutes. You used to sort of dominate them.
Today is a good loser, I will say.
He is a great loser.
You can still see the sadness in his eyes.
Of course.
Yeah, you can.
He also
did.
Was a little sad sometimes.
He was looking quite tired and old today for the first time, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said
maybe
he's
just
not
the,
a little
I was
boy
standing
anymore,
up.
You know?
He said in his own press conference that he finally has the color back in his cheeks.
Yeah.
Really? He also said that him and Vingegaard aren't married, which is important to get on the record.
He said we have many years together, when he said, oh, I think that makes us sound like we're a couple.
It's good stuff.
At the front of the Tour de France.
My Osabre time.
Yep.
We've got a new one today in the press room. Josh Robinson almost gasped when he saw that we had a new one, that Mikel Landa has finally been dislodged. Thanks for nothing, Mikel. Stinking up our prize classification. The new time, it's the 17th place. 17th, yeah. 1 hour, 4 minutes, 59 seconds.
Wow.
Okay, here's a clue.
Okay.
Kate goes first.
In the past week, I have sent his quotes down our WhatsApp group with the whole Escape editorial people.
No, you go first. You're the Escape boss.
No, you go first. You get to guess first. This is an advantage.
I'm trying to think whose quotes you sent me.
There's the same set of names on a pretty regular basis, so there's only probably... Who's in that range now?
Yeah, I'm trying.
Well, I will say that for the Netflix crowd, you know, this has a real chance of getting the Mayo Salb to break through in season two.
I would say so. Come on, guys. This is an audio production. We need guesses. It doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. Do you need more...
Well, I was about to say Thibaut Pinot, but he's in 11th, as you said earlier.
Yeah, that actually was my guess, which is why I was like, oh, shoot.
David Gadou is not an hour back.
We'd be much more excited if it were Thibaut Pinot.
Yeah.
I would actually, sometimes I'm a bit apprehensive about telling people if they're the Mayo Sabler, but Thibaut Pinot, I'd love to tell him he was the Mayo Sabler.
Ben O'Connor?
Yes, Kaylee. Nailed it. But the interesting point here is that heading to tomorrow in 16th place is Chris Harper. On 57 minutes and 29 seconds.
So all he has to do is lose.
Drop back.
2.5 minutes.
Appreciate, you know, a couple of laps on his own to drink it all in. And then cross the line and you're on you're a jersey. Not on the podium, the official podium, but we could make a little podium for him.
Yeah.
What he really should do is drop back and really, like, enjoy the Jumbo celebrations while those guys are at the back. Yeah. And, you know, that's 2.5 minutes easy. You just can't lose 7.5 minutes.
Did Chris Harper used to ride for Jumbo? Is that someone else?
Yeah, he did.
Yep. Oh, that's the perfect
Kirby
excuse.
Carlton Kirby used to mistake him as Jonas Vingegaard as Chris Harper in his UAE tour stage.
Oh yes.
And he's like, Chris Harper. And it's like, oh, it's Jonas Vingegaard.
So we need to try. That's a surprisingly good Carlton Kirby, I have to say. We need to try and get the word to Chris Harper.
We're going to figure it out.
We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to the start tomorrow.
No.
Hell no.
Whoever does that, we can't even tell who are the freaks who go to the start of stage 21 in the morning. What
we can't even get there if we wanted to.
But yeah, so that's an interesting battle for tomorrow to watch out for.
Yeah, I look forward to that. We always think it's locked in ahead of the Champs-Élysées, but actually, quite a few riders tend to lose time.
It's Australia.
Yep.
Battle.
Yeah.
Crikey.
Unfortunately for Jack Haig, he just had it way too early. Well, that's a point for me.
Yeah.
I'm not good at these games, I don't think.
That's okay. Better luck next year.
Yeah. I have some talents, you know, but I have a lot of non-talents. I write a lot of articles. I think some of them are pretty good.
They're pretty good.
A lot of people have told me that I've made them cry, which...
That's always a positive thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Kaylee?
Probably in frustration, maybe.
No, that was me today when you missed a sign for the Oars course.
the only time in my life I've ever missed a sign for the All course.
Oh man, we're not replaying this now. No. We'll end up in a tiff.
Nah,
it's fine. We got to see our one flower town today.
Oh, we saw a one flower town.
We
saw a one flower town. So it was actually...
I had
about 5-10 minutes where I was just being quiet, just being like, oh, this added like 30 minutes to my day that I needed. And then we both saw the sign. It was like, oh, one flower town. And everything was back to normal and life was great again.
It was a two flower town. It's like, I think that's the lowest we've ever seen. And then we got beat. And when we drove through this town, like, this town sucked.
We should. Yeah. So basically, there are in a lot of French towns. They have a certain number of flowers
quality of life.
Yeah, to designate the quality of life. And
who decides this? We don't know.
We don't know. We're gonna find out at one point.
I would not put up the sign.
Two Flower Town was criminally underrated because it was actually quite nice. The One Flower Town
was accurate.
Jesus. It was a one. If it didn't have the sign, you'd know it anyway. It sucked.
I would not put the sign up, like full stop. If I got the one flower, I'd like kind of hide it.
It must be
somewhere.
Like a clause where it's like, we're going to rate you and you're going to have to put the sign up.
We've seen quite a lot of four flower towns
in
the last couple of days because, you know, quite nice part of France. Well, I don't think, I didn't notice the one flower town on the way in.
No, because you went on the off course.
No, that was when we were already on the off course.
Oh, was it? Okay, yeah. My mistake.
All right, we got to get over. We got to get to Clermont-Ferrand. We need to get over to Clermont-Ferrand with Abby and Matt because Tour de France Femme begins.
Avec Swift.
Avec Swift. No, we on first reference. We don't need to keep saying it. That's the style guide. Yes, let's hear from Matt and Abby.
Hello, this is Abby Mickey.
And I'm Matt Deneve. Hello.
On the ground at the Tour de France Femme Avec Zwift. We're hanging out. We got here today. We're going to talk about some vibes. The race starts tomorrow. Pretty exciting.
Super exciting. We've talked about this before, but it feels like this has been a long time coming this season. And to actually be here on the ground and see all the riders and feel the excitement in the air is, super exciting. Can't wait.
I didn't get to be here last year, but you were here last year. And I feel like this race, compared to a lot of others, there's like an electricity in the air where it just feels different. Do you think that it was definitely the same last year, right? Like there was a lot of hype.
There was heaps of hype last year. And last year we had the different situation that the men's race and the women's race were in the same place. This year they're separated and it's a bit of a different vibe. It's quieter, obviously, but I'd say there's a real nervous excitement to it still, just the riders walking around and I think there is still a lot of buzz for it. I'll be really keen to see what the crowds are like on the first stage when we get underway tomorrow.
We got to see a ton of riders today. We got to interview a couple and also listen in on a couple. Yeah. You were hovering around Annemiek van Vleuten while she was giving some interviews.
Yeah.
You wouldn't tell me what she said.
Oh, I got to say it for the pod. No, she was really good. She was. She seemed super relaxed and very upbeat. And she did that classic thing that you do when you're the favorite for a race and talk about your rival as being the favorite, you know, trying to put pressure on Demi Vollering by saying she's the favorite for the race. She seems really up for it. She said she's prepared as well as she possibly could have. She feels as good as she was last year when she won the race. And she says if she doesn't win, then she can live with that, knowing that she's given it everything, trained to the best of her ability and will have no regrets. She did make one really interesting point about the final stage time trial that I thought was worth sharing. She reckons that stage, she's got a real advantage in that one over Vollering, because of her endurance, her, you know, the fact that she's been riding for so long, and she notices that her performance doesn't drop off over the course of a stage race, and she thinks that's one big advantage that she's got. So particularly coming the day after the Tourmalet stage, that well could be important, I think, and I thought that was a good point and can't wait to see how that plays out.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. I hadn't thought of that, because if you look at their performances in time trials this year, there's really only one, and Vollering came out on top.
Mm. That was a one-day race, wasn't it?
But it was a one-day race.
Mm.
Although, as Spratty said in the preview, it was one day after Tour de Suisse, and she drove like 8 hours before.
That's true.
So yeah. Technically, it was like tacked on the back of a multi-day race, but definitely a good point. And I'm excited to see. I mean, we've been talking for like months at this point, who is the better of the two of them. And it really, like, the anticipation feels almost overwhelming at this point.
Yeah.
Like, we still have so far to go until we get to the Tourmalet and we know who is the better climber. There's six stages before then.
Yeah, it's such a long time. And I think the good thing, though, is that those six stages, just about anything could happen. we were listening to Marianne Vos do some interviews just after Annemiek came through, and she had this great quote. She said, all the courses are open for adventure, which I quite like. And she was saying there's a lot of riders that will be looking at every single day thinking that there's their chance. And she said she thought the final climb on stage one would be raced very aggressively, that the GC contenders will be right up there. So, yeah, we're going to have to wait a long time for the key moment in the GC, I think. But I think there's going to be so much action before then. I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, the hype is real, and every single rider in the race wants to wear that yellow jersey. So yep. Even tomorrow's stage is going to be raced super aggressively. It's not – there's always a lot of tension going into the first stage of a stage race because there are jerseys up for grabs. There's no – they're all just open for the taking. But the Tour is the Tour, and it's just – it's so different. And it blows my mind that all in its second year it's already got this – like weight, like it's already bigger than every other race on the calendar, but I think we knew that was going to happen before the race even happened.
Yeah, for sure. Vos was really interesting as well, talking about her ambitions for the race. A stage win is the key for her. She wants to win stage. She's not interested in the green jersey as much to begin with. She said that last year, interestingly, and then lo and behold, finally ended up in green. What a surprise. So stage win for her is the goal. And she said if the yellow jersey, she manages to find a way to get into that early in the race, then great. But she's not particularly worried about that.
Cool. Well, we also talked to a couple other riders. You got to chat with Grace Brown a bit. Hometown favorite.
Yeah, I like Grace. She's good. She's always good for a chat. She's come from a different approach to this race than a lot of others. You know, we've seen altitude training really take off in the last year or so in the women's peloton, and a lot of riders went to altitude ahead of this. She didn't. She went home to Melbourne, Australia, where it's cold and wet at the moment, and she talked a bit about that. And I've got a piece going up on escapecollective.com probably tomorrow by the time this goes up, but talking about how she kind of mitigated the changes in weather and how it just leaves her in a better headspace mentally, and how that translates to being better on the bike, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I'll be interested to see how she approaches the race. I talked to her teammate, Marta Cavalli, and Marta's coming in with obviously a lot of, I think baggage would maybe be the proper term after last year's crash that really, I mean, I think changed the trajectory of her career at this point. It's taken her so long to bounce back from that. I rewatched the crash actually while I was writing a piece for Escape, and it was so bad. But the team has so many strong riders, and it's interesting looking at their roster, kind of what their options are, because they have Sile, who won a stage last year. They have Marta, who's targeting the seventh stage. Obviously, that would be the stage for her. They have Vittoria Guanzini, who is an amazing sprinter, so she has multiple opportunities. And then Grace, who has won races solo, races that should have been sprint finishes, but is also an incredible time trialist.
Yeah.
So she, while you would pick her for the final stage to go up against Marlon Rooser, she also could sneak in there.
Yeah, she said that the final stage time trial is definitely the big goal for her. And I think part of that is the World Championships time trial, which is only in a week or two or a few weeks from now. That's one of her biggest goals of the season. So that time trial is an important lead up. So she wants to do well there. But she said if she can get up the road in a couple of other stages, she'll definitely try that. And yeah, as you said, that's her trademark, isn't it? Getting up the road late. And she has found it more difficult to do that in recent seasons as people have kind of cottoned on that she shouldn't be given too much latitude, but I'm sure we'll see her give it a try.
For me, I think one of the most interesting things that I observed whilst we were standing around, and there were riders kind of all over the place, and riders are friends with riders on other teams. Everyone's kind of chatting with each other. Everyone mixes together, but in their own little bubble kind of, SC Works has this presence that is intimidating before the race even started. I feel like they don't look at anyone else. They don't interact with anyone else. They very much like live in their own world. And it struck me as mind games before they even enter the race. You walked up to multiple riders and were chatting with people. I walked up to a ton of riders and was chatting with people, and neither of us even attempted to approach SC Works because they're like, it's like they're wearing armor.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely felt that as well. There was a sense of impenetrability about the kind of aura they have around them or something. But I think just from a racing perspective, I think that's going to be fascinating to see what they do this week because, Vollering is obviously one of the big favourites, but, we didn't see them as dominant at the Giro. Obviously, they didn't have that as good a race there. And, a full-strength squad here with Vollering at the helm. I can't wait to see what they're able to do and whether that will be enough to overcome Van Vleuten's dominance.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I wrote an analysis of all of the top 10 teams in the race on Escape Collective, and SC Works really has someone for everyone. And looking at the first stage, they have like two riders based on how the race goes. If the climb kind of sheds a lot of riders, Capecchi's still going to be there. If Wiebes can hold on, then she's pretty much going to win the stage. She has very little competition, especially if Cool gets dropped, DSM's sprinter. So I think for tomorrow, it's hard to look at anybody but SC Works.
It makes it a tricky one for the Escape Collective fantasy competition. just to work that in there. I thought Wiebes would be the pick, but I've got Capecchi at the moment. So who have you got for the first stage?
I don't think you can go wrong with either because Wiebes, like, you can pick her for two more stages to come and it's basically a surefire win. And so I think the only time it gets a little bit tricky is that stage two looks like a pretty good day for Capecchi. So do you want to save Capecchi for stage two or do you want to waste her because you can't reuse riders?
This is a good point.
So
I need to give it some more thought.
Yeah.
I've got some time.
Yeah, I won't tell you who I picked. Okay. People can join the fantasy competition themselves and figure it out. Well, we will be back tomorrow with a full podcast episode on the ground of the women's race. We have incredible audio diaries from Veronica Ewers of EF Education, TIBCO Silicon Valley Bank, Vittoria Guazzini of FDJ Suez, Jess Allen from Jayco Alula, Ashley Moon-Passio of AG Insurance, Sudal Quickstep, Lucinda Brand from Lidl Trek, Ella Wiley of Live Plus Wahoo, and Audrey Cordon Rigaud is back for another year from Human Powered Health. So we've got a lot. And like that if it was a team would be just unreal. So
they're gonna put us out of work here. You've got enough for a whole podcast just in that squad, I reckon.
I'm so excited to hear what they have to say. So definitely tune in. Matt and I are going to be on the ground for the entire week. And yeah, we got a lot to talk about.
Yep, sure do. Can't wait.
I wonder if they've been to the best pizza place in La France yet.
I did send it to Abby.
Did you?
Yeah, I did send
really
it. She also sent me this morning a really good coffee shop that we missed entirely.
Oh, and we never went to.
Yep.
Guys. Have we got anything from Jose today?
We do. All right, let's hear from Jose Bain for the final time of this men's Tour de France. She will be back for the Tour de France Femme final day of the men's race, and we look at the theft of one of the most famous paintings in the world, the Mona Lisa.
While many thousands of people are waiting for the peloton on the Champs-Élysées, other big groups of people are wandering through the Louvre Museum. There is a lot to see, but most people come to see a painting called Mona Lisa. It's not a big painting. It's also not super spectacular, but it is one of the best-known paintings in the world. A spectacular theft back in 1911 played a role in her fame. If you were standing outside the Louvre in Paris on the morning of August 21, 1911, you might have noticed three men hurrying out of the museum. The three Italian handymen had just spent the night in an art supply closet inside the museum to pull off a rather big heist. On that August morning, with the Louvre still closed, they slipped out of the closet and lifted a painting, the frame and protective glass case off the wall. They then stripped the painting off its frame and case, and the wooden canvas was then covered with a blanket and hustled off to the Quai d'Orsay train station. There the trio boarded a 7:47 a.m. express train out of Paris, and the Mona Lisa joined them on their journey. Before its theft, the Mona Lisa was not widely known outside the art world. Leonardo da Vinci painted it in 1507, but it wasn't until the 1860s that critics began to hail it as a masterwork of Renaissance painting, although still mostly within the French scene. Dorothy and Tom Hubler wrote about the painting's heist in their book, The Crimes of Paris. It was 28 hours, they say, until anyone even noticed the four bare hooks where the Mona Lisa once was. Visitors thought it was taken away to have photos taken, like for all artifacts in the extensive collection at the time. After the Louvre announced the theft, newspapers all over the world ran headlines about the missing masterpiece. After a week-long shutdown, the Louvre reopened to mobs of people, and they all rushed to see the empty spot that had become a mark of shame for Parisians. Meanwhile, the thieves had made a clean getaway. They were three Italians, two brothers, Vincenzo and Michele Lancelotti, and their leader, Vincenzo Perugia. He was a handyman who had worked for the Louvre to install the protective glass for the Mona Lisa. Perugia hoped to sell the painting, but the heist had received so much attention that the Mona Lisa was simply unsellable. He could have returned it and received a reward, but Perugia was afraid to get arrested. He stashed it in the false bottom of a trunk in his Paris boarding house. 28 months after he stole it from the Louvre, Perugia finally made an attempt at selling the painting to an art dealer in Florence. But the dealer was suspicious. He called a colleague to take a look, and a stamp on the back confirmed its authenticity of the Mona Lisa. They told Perugia they would get back to him with an estimate. But not even 30 minutes after he returned home, the police were at his door. Perugia said he had wanted to bring the painting home to Italy after, according to him, Napoleon had stolen it the century before. Eventually, the Mona Lisa was returned to Paris, and the thief only got an 8-month prison sentence.
I did not know that Leonardo da Vinci wasn't one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
All right, time for us to wrap up. We're gonna call it a night here from Lamarck Stein.
We're about to go to a place that Joshua Robinson of the Wall Street Journal has been looking forward to for a very long time.
Everything's coming up, Mulhouse.
He said it.
That's it. That's the podcast.
Off to Mulhouse and get a train tomorrow and get to Paris. We'll see you there. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Ciao. Welcome to Thrill Hunt.